Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark the Liberty, and joining me today is...
The one-year-old Corey Knockreiner.
The one-year-old Corey Knockreiner. And not only is Corey one-year-old, but so is our podcast. It is our one-year anniversary from the very first inaugural episode of the 443. On today's episode, we'll chat about a few news topics, ranging from security updates to IoT devices, to hacking power grids, before jumping into a trip down memory lane over some of our favorite topics or subjects from the last year of this podcast. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into the news.
Let's do it!
So today we actually have a couple news topics to cover. The first one is a rather interesting one. I guess last week at the time that you're listening to this, Samsung's official support Twitter account tweeted out a message telling Samsung TV owners to run a virus scan on their TV every few weeks. And along with this tweet, they actually included a video showing how to access the virus scan option on their TV menu. If you weren't already aware, Samsung actually uses an open source operating system for most of their TVs after, I think, 2015 or 2017. This operating system is called Tizen. And some of the more recent models actually include McAfee antivirus pre-installed on their televisions. I thought
that's not really news, is it, Mark? I mean, doesn't everyone know that you virus scan your TVs, your webcams, and your refrigerators? Pretty common knowledge, right?
Right. I mean, if only it were so easy. But it is, honestly, I know you're joking, but it's weird that we're in an age now where we can run a virus scan on our IoT devices.
Well, it's not only we can. I think you and I know they're often Linux devices and they do get malware. And we do need to do something about it as an industry. But I don't think consumers out there realize that a TV or a fridge or a webcam or whatever the IoT device is needs to run AV, which I think is why the world is kind of surprised by this news of a TV manufacturer telling you to run virus scan. So I do think maybe for consumers, they need to come up with some other solution. But you and I do know that there is malware on these devices for sure, or there can be.
So Samsung TVs, at least some of their newer models, do have McAfee AV installed. How come more IoT devices don't have some form of AV? Do you think it's a lack of incentive for manufacturers? Do you think it's just they don't have engines that can run on these?
Well, I think part of it is just the weirdness in the consumer market, right? I mean, I didn't know Samsung TVs had McAfee on them. I'm not sure. I guess it probably shows up under their smart apps if you have one that does. But how many people are really aware of even that fact alone? So, while I think you and I probably would agree that they do need some security, the reason the manufacturers are doing this is to stop these malicious APKs from getting on TVs, or perhaps to stop some of the attacks that have happened to TVs that I think you and I will talk about in a second. But maybe traditional security, maybe the whole give a consumer AV on his computer is not the right way to solve this problem. Maybe what you need to do is harden your consumer device more, because it is the type of device that people aren't going to treat like a computer, even if it is.
Yeah, and getting malware on your TV isn't outside the realm of possibility. It was back in, I think, March of 2017, during the CIA Vault 7 leaks on WikiLeaks. One of the hacking tools that was leaked during that was something called Weeping Angel, which was malware developed by the CIA to specifically target Samsung TVs. And it had a few different functionality features on it. It could record audio through the TV. It could steal your Wi-Fi keys if your TV was connected to Wi-Fi. They were even trying to develop a way to record video through TVs that had built-in webcams on them too. So it kind of makes sense that Samsung specifically would try and install anti-malware on their devices.
Yeah, absolutely. That targeted them. But even before that, I think 5 years ago, as you and I were looking at IoT issues, when I think 1 year when I was trying to prove an increase in IoT botnets, TVs were among the first things to get infected. There was a botnet of IoT devices that TVs were taking part in. Granted, I don't know if the TVs were targeting directly or whether they were just happened to be Linux devices with some sort of open access, but TVs have been infected in the past.
Now, Samsung actually deleted this tweet only a few hours after tweeting it out. Speculation time. Why do you think they did that?
I have no clue. I think it's just because the consumers acted with such surprise, right? I think everyone around the world that isn't as deeply concerned with security as security professionals may think this is kind of funny. Oh, it's a TV. Why does it need AV? And now I'm supposed to run AV on my TV. It just seems like the type of device you don't have to worry about. So I think consumers probably had a pretty extreme reaction to their tweet. And that's why Samsung probably deleted it to rethink the way they're going to go about this. But as I mentioned, you know, while I kind of think this might be the wrong way to do it, the consumers of TVs aren't necessarily tech folks. They're, you know, they could be non-technical, you know, grandmas everywhere. But so maybe the solution isn't to have them manually run AV scans. But I do think they need a solution. I do think it's very clear TVs can be a target.
That's actually one of the points that quite a few comments on some of the articles I read made was, so if they have anti-malware on the TV, why isn't it an automated scan or like a scan that runs on boot just to validate the operating system and apps before loading it up? That might make a little more sense in a market where the consumer probably doesn't have a whole lot of tech knowledge.
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, you could go even farther and make it a whitelist environment. I mean, if they considered a little bit more about hardening the system, you mentioned it runs the open source Tizen operating system, but there are ways to load hardened versions of Android that don't have very much. You can use trusted boot and certificates, so you only run signed code. And that could limit to Samsung signed code, meaning even if they're partnering with other people for smart apps on the TV, it has to get a Samsung signature of approval before anything runs on the TV. Thus, you kind of have this whitelisted environment where only things that are already approved ever run. So there's a lot of different strategies that an IoT manufacturer can use to really harden a device. Now, it doesn't make it 100% hack-proof, but for something like a TV, you know, while you or I maybe even were paranoid enough to run alternate security scans on our devices, while you or I may be able to do that, the average TV consumer, it's really shouldn't be their job to think about security on a TV, even though the TV requires it. So I think they need to go about doing this a different way.
Yeah, I agree. Now, if TVs are getting anti-malware services on them, what do you think the next IoT device to get it is? Do you think like my pet feeder or something, or that smart egg container I have in the fridge might get it?
Exactly. Or my heated toilet that starts heating as soon as I start my iPhone app. I don't know, but almost as you and I are finding, a huge percentage of IoT devices are just embedded Linux systems, which is what this is, or Android systems maybe, which kind of a different flavor of Linux in some ways. So there's not a lack of devices that wouldn't have the same issues that a Samsung TV has. So the point is there's a lot of IoT that need additional security. So potentially could have a, you know, AV as one of those options, even though I don't think it's the best one for consumer IoT.
Yep. So I guess if you have a Samsung TV, go ahead and run a malware scan every week or so. And if you happen to find anything, please let us know, because I think that'd be super interesting. And with that, let's move on to our next news story. So also last week, the New York Times published an article about the United States escalating attacks against the Russian power grid. In the article, they stated that U.S. government officials told them they were using new authorities granted to them by the White House and Congress to deploy cyber tools much more aggressively than they previously had. And
if anyone cares, it's apparently that there's a military authorization bill, a bill that's existed for quite a long time. I think it's the John S. McCain National Defense Authorization Act. I think someone in the White House probably doesn't like the name of that act for whatever reason. But anyways, there's a little known new legal authority slipped into that particular military authorization bill, which included, measures that approve more routine clandestine military activity in cyberspace.
Now, do they have to move that bill out of the room anytime he visits the Capitol building?
Yeah, or maybe paint over the beginning of the name and put something else like, I don't know. I'm sure there's a word that this guy puts on lots of buildings that would probably make the bill a little more, get his approval a little more.
Oy. So the government officials that were cited in this, I guess they weren't cited, they were anonymous, said that they've taken these actions partly as a warning to prepare and also to prepare for any major conflict between the U.S. and Russia. And you mentioned all this comes after they received, both from the bill and actually from Trump himself, authorization to take a much more aggressive stance. And we actually talked about this, I think, back in March when this bill was first moving through and when Trump first started giving U.S. Cyber Command more authorization. I feel like I said that a million times already. But really, this kind of shows that we're starting to reach an escalation point in what we call the cyber Cold War. Nation states have been attacking each other for quite some time, and now the U.S. is being much more aggressive against other major nation states as well.
Yeah, it's clear we're in a cyber arms race right now, or a cyber Cold War. I think I talked about on past episodes when we talked about the most sophisticated attacks, which included many nation-state ones, I've always believed Stuxnet was kind of Pandora's box heading in this direction. But I do think things are getting worse now and escalating a little out of control.
Yeah, and all this kind of also comes at a time where there's reports that Xenotime, which is a group of hackers that were responsible for the Triton malware that went after, I think, some oil infrastructure, is currently probing the U.S. power grid as well. So there are genuine concerns that power grids are going to be a big attack focus if it ever comes to a cybersecurity war. And it kind of makes sense. Like, I know in the States, our power grid's actually pretty old, and I imagine there's quite a few single points of failure. We saw that, what was it, like the mid-2000s or something, where basically the entire eastern seaboard lost power because of one issue somewhere in like Ohio or something.
Yep. And coincidentally, this is definitely conspiratorial, put on your tinfoil hat. So this is not a cyber attack as far as we know. But the article we're talking about right now came out on Saturday, and I believe it was the day after on Sunday, where Argentina's power went out. You know, not just a localized thing, but one where millions and millions of people are without power. Now, they don't. Last I read, they're not clear on why they had such a massive outage, and they have specifically claimed that they don't think it's a cyber attack, but they're not ruling anything out yet. But the main point of this is it wasn't just a little regional thing; it was the entire city, a huge area. So these power grids, as you kind of say, are pretty sensitive, So you can have pretty big cascading effects. And the issue with this sort of power outage is banking, transportation, finance. Lots of cascading failure happens because all that stuff is dependent on power.
Yep. And we also saw back in 2015 when Russia allegedly attacked Ukraine's power grid. And along with that, they launched quite a few other cyber attacks. There was like a denial of service against the call center for the power infrastructure company too, and going after different SCADA controllers as well. So we've seen what can happen when a country goes after another country's power grid. And in that case, it actually led to, I would say, physical warfare as well, even though it's been claimed by certain countries to be other things.
Occupation.
Yep, exactly. So what's our takeaway for this one for the average person? Is this another turn off your power and go live in a bunker somewhere thing?
I guess, or at least have your own generator and solar power so you could survive this. I don't know if there's a takeaway other than that we all need to participate in our governments when they're democracies. What I dislike about this story is the fact that it's one of the particular White House advisors, John Bolton, who is rather aggressive in this type of operation. He's the one that's kind of pushing that other governments aren't scared enough of us, so we're going to show them our capabilities. But what I find really weird about this situation is we have a situation where the anonymous intelligence sources are actively claiming that we're not telling the president much about this because we're worried, you know, we're it's against Russia, and we're worried that our president's going to leak this intelligent information, so we can't really tell him about it. And yet, this is a big deal that the president is the one that really should be authorizing and should know the most about. So you have one advisor kind of handling something that should be president level, while the intelligence community is kind of actively not sharing with the president, according to the sources in the New York Times article anyways.
Welcome to silly season.
I feel like for something that is as serious as this kind of thing, those are not the kind of things that make citizens feel good about the, you know, the black ops espionage campaign.
Yep. And I will say I am on board with us at least taking like proactive defensive measures. I'm on board with reconnaissance. I don't like the idea of spear rattling, like saying, oh, look at us, we're all big and strong, we could hack you any day. I think most of the world kind of already knows we do that without being overtly aggressive about it too. I don't know. Maybe I just prefer ignorance about this entire nation state hacking subject.
No, I am with you that we do have to have these sorts of campaigns. You just like to hear that they're run with the top leaders of our country knowing that they're running.
Right.
And like you, I think we need to have the capability and show we have the capability in non-aggressive manners, but not necessarily create the situation where Russia will respond.
Yep.
You know, that's what led to a escalating, you know, Cold War, where two sides got enough nuclear power to blow up the whole world 10 times over. You know, you don't really need enough power to wipe out all of humanity 10 times.
I agree. 9 times is probably sufficient. So interesting news this week. I guess if the power goes out next week, you probably know what started it. And with that, let's move on. Corey, we actually have a very special day today on our podcast. It is our 1-year anniversary of the 443 podcast.
Ooh, I like that birthday much better. Can I tell people I'm 1 year old now?
Yes, you know what? You absolutely can. And I think that actually disqualifies you from being an executive in a company, so I'll go ahead and start moving my stuff in. But I figured since it's our 1-year anniversary, we could look back over the last year and maybe pick out our favorite like news story or feature topic or something from the last year and why we enjoyed it. We've had, how many weeks in a year? Like 50-something episodes so far, plus or minus a few special editions along the way. So we've covered a lot of ground. And I wanted to hear like maybe what your favorite topic was that we went over.
So it sounds kind of pandering and obvious after the talks we just had, but there's so many things we've talked about that I enjoy. I even enjoy things like our Black Hat DEF CON, you know, podcast, where we're actually talking about a lot of things, but it's always the latest. But I think overall, you know, it started with our third podcast where we covered nation state attacks. And since then, we've had a number of podcasts where we talked about, as I mentioned, the most sophisticated attacks, where we talked about weaponized Stuxnet. So as you might be able to tell by my passion for nation states, you know, while I see the need for nation states to have capabilities in quote unquote cyber, I am worried that nation states themselves are the ones that are actually pushing cyber threats and helping advance even criminal threats faster than would happen otherwise. So I would say some of my favorite episodes are ones like, I think it was called the Nation State Attacks episode on July 2nd, and then things like weaponized Stuxnet on September 24th. And we've had a number of other episodes like that, including one where we interviewed Ricardo, who's someone that works as a product manager here at WatchGuard, but was past NSA. So I know that's more themed in a particular episode, but those are the episodes I really have enjoyed.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess on my end, if we're talking themes, like back in September when we talked about Facebook getting caught with shadow contact information, or October when we talked about Facebook getting hacked, or in March when we talked about Facebook and WhatsApp and Messenger going down. Basically, any day we talk about Facebook getting attacked is a good day for me. No, but in all seriousness,
I guess they deserve it.
You're right.
By the way, I have some cognitive dissonance here because I agree with your thoughts on Facebook and how we're letting them ruin our privacy, but they're doing a good job without us too. And yet, I'm a VR lover that really enjoys Oculus, which is now a Facebook property. So I have this kind of love, but hopeful, I mean, hate, but hopeful love relationship.
It still actually weirds me out that Facebook owns a VR company, a major VR company.
I mean, the theme you're talking about with privacy, we've only been talking about the stuff we type online. When you start adding, you know, body tracking to the equation, it can get pretty scary.
Yep.
And the new headsets have like 5 cameras on them. So, wonder what they're doing with that data.
Recording your entire house. Congratulations. In all seriousness, though, if I had to pick like an episode or a subject, I mean, even just last week, chatting with Emil Grostra was awesome. I've been eagerly awaiting that episode to come out up until last Monday. I thought that was fantastic. But I think my favorite one we've done over the year was back in July of 2018, where we talked about the dark web and went into a deep dive on how the dark web worked. And the reason I like that one the most is I actually travel around quite a bit for work. You and I both go and speak at a bunch of different conferences every single month, and we meet a whole bunch of people. And a lot of the people I meet that have listened to this podcast all point out that dark web episode is one of their favorites as well, just because it was a rather complex topic that they were then able to understand after just that episode. And that's what I really enjoy doing on this podcast. So I think that one specifically is probably my favorite.
That's awesome. Yep. It's great to educate the community about technical concepts. And the dark web is fascinating. It's surprising how some people may not really realize how to get on it because it seems hard. But when they realize how easy it is, it opens a whole new world.
Yep. Just be very, very careful with what you go browse on that whole new world.
Yeah. Make sure you know how to protect yourself as well.
Exactly. So good news for our listeners. We've been renewed for a second season. That's a thing, right? Fox hasn't canceled us yet. So I'm looking forward to many more years to come.
I remember some sort of a jet executive joke and thinking about who has the power of cancellation.
Corey self-immolates. So it's been a fun year. Looking forward to the hopefully years plural to come. And thank you everyone for listening. And I guess that's our sign off for this week. Thanks again for listening, everyone. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics, or suggestions for future episode topics, or a positive virus scan from one of your Samsung TVs, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_. Corey is at @SecAdept, and the both of us are at #the443podcast. Thank you again for listening, and we will see you next week.